Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order, and we have a quorum to conduct business. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 9:10 a.m. on Friday, April the 13th, 2018. Present today, we have Representative Pruitt, Representative Wilson, Vice Chair Guerra, Co-Chair Seaton, Representative Tilton, Representative Grin, Representative Thompson, myself, Co-Chair Foster. Before we start, just a reminder, if folks could mute their cell phones. At this meeting, we will have three bills before the committee, SB 155, which is Real Estate Appraisal Management Companies, HB 399, which is Corporate Tax, Remove Exemptions and Credits, and finally SB 78, which is Permanent Fund Dividend Contributions and Lottery. And so the first bill up this morning is SB 155, Real Estate Appraisal Management Companies by Senator Meyer. And at this hearing, we will get an introduction to the bill. And at this time, I'd like to call Senator Meyer's aide, Edra Morledge, to the table. And if you could put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Good morning, Co-Chair Foster, members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Edra Morledge, staff to Senator Meyer. I'll give you my presentation, and then if you would like, I can go through the sectional analysis of the bill. Senate Bill 155 relates to the regulation of real estate appraisal management companies in the state. It came to our attention early in the session that the federal government has imposed a deadline of August 10th of this year for states who choose to regulate these companies to implement comprehensive legislation to do so. Appraisal management companies are independent entities through which mortgage lenders order residential real estate valuation services. And it applies only to residential. Oh, thanks. Only residential real estate, not commercial. These companies fulfill an administrative function in the appraisal process, including selecting an appraiser and delivering the appraisal to the lender. The bill before you does two main things. It requires the regulation of appraisal management companies, or AMCs, by the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers, including establishing minimum standards in accordance with the federal Dodd-Frank Act of 2010. And second, it establishes an annual registry fee for the AMCs to be collected and transmitted to the Federal Appraisal Subcommittee on an annual basis to support the maintenance of the National Registry on the federal level. The main thing here is with SB 155 is if we don't pass this legislation, appraisal management companies would be prohibited from providing appraisal services that involve federally related transactions in Alaska after that August 10th deadline. This potentially could pose an economic hardship to Alaskans that are in the market to purchase or sell their homes, as it's likely that lending institutions would be inclined to shy away from using appraisal management companies that can't deal with these federally related transactions. By regulating the AMCs in the state, it offers consumers a broader range of options in obtaining appraisal services. Currently, Alaska is one of only four states that doesn't have this comprehensive legislation in place to regulate appraisal management companies. However, like Alaska, all of the other three states are currently in the process of doing so. Senate Bill 155 establishes the framework for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to regulate AMCs and establishes minimum standards, which includes requiring these appraisal management companies to designate a controlling person as the main point of contact to the board, who must also actively be certified as a real estate appraiser. Second, it requires appraisers working with these companies to comply with the uniform standards of professional appraisal practice and to meet all other professional and legal standards to conduct appraisals in Alaska. And third, it requires a surety bond of $50,000. Due to the impending federal deadline, the department has requested a one-year waiver. However, we won't know if that waiver is going to be granted until after some point in May. Theoretically, we could be out of session. However, my understanding is that if we are actively in the process of passing legislation, the prospects of receiving that waiver are almost guaranteed. The department can speak more to that. So the bill as you have it before you establishes an effective date of January 1st of 2019, and by which time all the regulations should be in place, and then all appraisal management companies that are operating in the state would need to be registered with the department by March 1st of 2019. That's basically my presentation on what the bill does. I can go through the specifics and by way of the sectional summary if you'd like, or try to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Orledge. And I'd also like to note that we're joined by Representative Ortiz and Representative Guttenberg, and I think we're okay with the sectional, not needing the sectional analysis. We do have a question. I just want to let folks know, also available for questions, I'm showing a Mark Schiffman with Real Estate Valuation Advocacy Association. There's a Bill Scoggins, Troutman Sanders Strategies Law Firm. I don't see him online right now, but maybe he will be on at some point here. And also we'll have some three people giving invited testimony. So with that, first question, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what federal transactions are we speaking of?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's a complicated subject. I think that Mark Schiffman, who we have online, could speak more knowledgeably about that. But my understanding is that some loans deal with federally related transactions and some don't. They can also change midstream if the loan is sold off, say, to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, those programs, or maybe I'm getting those mixed up. But I think that Mark Schiffman can better explain that to you. It's actually kind of a complicated subject. Some loans can start out with federally related transactions involved and then switch midstream, and some may not. So that's where it becomes complicated, and I think Mark Schiffman could better explain that.
And a follow-up?
I'd like to recognize that we're also joined by the sponsor of the bill, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And Representative Wilson?
So I was thinking more like VA loans. Would VA loans fall underneath federal transactions? And maybe Mr. Schiffman, you know, whoever's online, can answer. Just trying to figure out what the transactions are.
Mr. Mark Schiffman, are you online? And if you could put your name and your affiliation on the record, and we can restate the question if you need.
Good morning. My name is Mark Schiffman. I represent the Real Estate Valuation Advocacy Association. Thank you for having me.
And thank you. Would you like us to repeat the question?
I believe the question was, what's the definition of a federally related transaction? And I believe EDRA gave a very fair analysis of it. It's very complex. As a loan begins, it can either be a federally related transaction or a non-federally related transaction. It just depends on how the loan will be used. Over the life of that loan, once it's sold into the secondary market, it might change from one to the other. Some of it involves Fannie and Freddie. Other parts of it are related to FIREA and how those are calculated. So it's just very complicated. The short story is, according to banking regulators, federally related transactions make up about 10% of all transactions. So it's about the best estimate we have as to what percentage they might be. And the reason that it's so low has to do with amendments to FIREA over the last 25 years, chipping away at that definition.
Thank you.
I believe the second question was related to the VA. This would not be included with the VA. I mean, if this is AMC's and the VA system for appraisal and appraisal management is completely separate from what we're talking about. These are just traditional mortgage originations.
Okay. And then I have a different question.
Representative Wilson?
So is this a new board, or is this going to go underneath the real estate board?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, this will go underneath the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers.
Perfect. Thank you.
And Senator Meyer, if you wanted to put yourself on the record and just want to give you the opportunity to say anything if you wanted to.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My apologies for running late today. I believe my staff has explained the bill quite well. This was brought to our attention that, you know, this is something that needs to be done this year, actually August of this year. We're one of four states that hasn't already passed this, and the other three states are in the process as well. I think the biggest question, and this might be a better question for the Board of Realtors, is if we pass this bill, can they get the regulations done in time to meet the deadline of August 10th? And the original bill, and again, Edward might explain this, we had a transition period that said the bill will go in effect by August 10th to make that deadline, but then there was a transition period to have the regulations kind of follow after the bill goes into effect on August 10th. And I believe now the current bill before you just has an effective date of January 1 of next year. And that's, I think that's something worth discussing, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. And if there is anybody online who would like to respond to that, feel free to chime in. Otherwise, we'll go to the next question. Is there anybody who would like to say anything on that?
Hi, my name is David Derry. I'm serving as chair of the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I just a clarification to Senator Meyer's comment. It's the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers that will be the oversight regulatory authority for this, not the Board of Real Estate, as that covers the agents and brokers. And regarding the question of whether we would be able to develop regulations in time, Deputy Director Sarah Chambers has testified that it would be difficult to probably get regulations adopted, certainly by August, and it'll be a push to get it done by January. So the request to extend that time for 1 year, which is pending before a federal entity that actually has oversight for our board, is real likely that it would be approved, and certainly we'd be able to develop regulations within that 1 year time frame.
Great, thank you. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I want to go back a couple of steps, and I want to ask, what does this board do, right? I mean, we haven't established that. What is what is the function of this, of the appraisal management the boards, what we're setting up? It looks like, from my perspective, we're having appraisers on an appraisal oversight board to appraise themselves or not. And if the feds are saying that you cannot have a federal loan without a board, but the board has to have regulations and oversight, what don't they trust about it to operate without something? So, I, you know, maybe I haven't caught up on this already, but what did they do? I mean, and what function did they use? We set up a lot of these things in the state or on the private sector that all they are another level of cost, another profit center, right? So you're buying something, let's say a home, you have the bank, the appraisal. Now that we're putting somebody else in the middle that can charge or oversight or have costs come down, what function do they do? What do they do to begin with, and what function do they serve? We can start there.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I'll give you just my cursory understanding, and if I'm understanding your question, you're asking what function does the appraisal management company serve?
Yeah.
Okay. So these are companies that have been in existence for decades. With the Wall Street Reform Act of 2010, the Dodd-Frank Act, the federal government through the appraisal subcommittee at the federal level wanted to institute certain rules and basically rules of conduct for these companies that add an extra layer between lending institutions and consumers. And they required states who are going to have lending institutions within them to implement federal standards of basically of conduct for these companies, and so that everybody's playing by the same rules throughout all 50 states. States don't have to allow these companies to operate within them, but if they want to, and we have lending institutions that use that solely use appraisal management companies, states that do use them have to conform to these federal oversight rules through the Dodd-Frank Act. So it was, the intention was for consumer protection so that lending institutions wouldn't have undue influence over appraisals that they would then be lending money for. And again, states don't have to do this, but if you have lending institutions that use them within the state, then you do have to conform to these federal rules.
Okay, so let me step back, because maybe what do they actually do? What is their function, right? Do they audit appraisals? Do they take consumer complaints? Do they address issues that the banks have with an appraisal? How do they do that? Because in many ways, you're putting appraisals on a board that does this. I'm sure there's a conflict of interest and ethics standards. But what function do they actually do? What increase in the I understand what you said, that they're going to give more oversight. But what is, if you go to a meeting, what are you going to see that this board will be functioning as? Is it complaints? Is it oversight? Is it making sure that appraisals operate within parameters? And so I'm going back to just, you know, Senate Bill 155-101, right? So start me off at the beginning.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I think perhaps Dave Derry, who is the chair of the Certified Board of Appraisals, he may be able to answer that question a little bit better about how they're going to operate.
Okay.
And Mr. Derry, if you're online, if you could state your name and your affiliation, and we can restate the question if needed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. My name is David Derry. I'm serving as the chair of the Board of Alaska Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers. And Representative Guttenberg, I think maybe your question relates to actually what does an AMC do? And let me just explain that AMC's function is really a function of maintaining a roster of appraisers and basically selecting those appraisers to do an appraisal report for a lender. Then that appraisal report would then go back to that AMC, that appraisal management company. Appraisal management company would review that for their own internal purposes and then in turn relay that to the lender that has contracted with them. And just in terms of costs and your concern about laying or overlaying another layer of cost on consumers, I would like to point out that not all lenders in the state of Alaska actually use AMCs. For example, First National Bank of Alaska and North Rim Bank do not use AMCs. Some lenders do. Wells Fargo does. And it's primarily a situation where we would have maybe lower 48 lenders. For example, a Rocket Mortgage, Quicken Loans that does a lot of advertising. They would use an AMC because of their lower 48 location and because they may get a loan request for Fairbanks, Kodiak, Nome, and probably would have no clue of what appraisers actually service those areas in Alaska. So having these AMCs provides that function to those lenders, and our purpose as far as the Board of Alaska Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers in testifying that we support AMC oversight is we're just the efforts there to provide the maximum availability of mortgage credit to the Alaska consumer. Now, I think the check in terms of cost is really by not all lenders are using AMCs. So certainly, you know, if you're going to go to Quicken Mortgage for a loan versus First National Bank Alaska, Quicken Mortgage isn't going to be able to charge more just because they use an AMC. That's part of their function. And in some cases, that cost is paid by the lender. And the appraisers, in some cases, the appraisers agree to do the appraisal report for those AMCs at a reduced fee. But that's up to the individual appraiser. There's nothing in the legislation that would cover that.
If I may.
So does that answer your question, sir?
Well, it gets me there. So this is – so we're setting up a board to have oversight over AMCs. I mean, when you say the home buyer is not going to be the one to pay it, the bank's going to be paying it, well, everything gets passed down to the buyer at the end of the day. So – so is there going to be – so what I'm understanding is there's – it's basically an AMC is basically a referral service. And then we're setting up a board to oversee the AMCs. So is there one statewide one, or how many AMCs are there in states? And then you have a board to oversee the AMC. So I'm trying to figure out the structure we're setting up.
This is David Derry again, and through the chair, there really is no new board being set up, sir. We're actually the existing Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers. We're taking this on as an additional function. And the reason that is happening that way is this sort of evolved out of the subprime mortgage crisis that affected the lower 48 back in 2008. We were pretty well insulated that from that in Alaska. But as a result of that and some problems with AMCs and lenders trying to influence appraisers, this idea and this legislation then of having AMC oversight evolved, and it fell on the real estate appraisal boards in each of the states to do this. Now, there are no Alaska-based AMCs. These are all lower 48 AMCs. In terms of numbers of AMCs, looking at some other states, Arizona has 168 AMCs registered. Washington has, I have a list, about 200 AMCs, but that does include some inactive and AMCs. Oregon has 133 AMCs. So it's a large number of these AMCs, and most of them are large corporate entities. You know, again, that cost is going to have to be competitive for them to operate. I don't think it's going to result by authorizing AMCs in Alaska. I don't think we're going to see an increase in the cost of borrowing. Currently, AMCs can operate in Alaska. It's only in August of 2018 is the drop-dead date, where after that date, then AMCs cannot operate in the state. So up to this time, AMCs have been able to operate in the state of Alaska.
Mr. Chair, this is Mark Schiffman with NEVA. I was wondering if I could add just a quick comment, if you might.
Sure. Go ahead, Mr. Schiffman. And if you could maybe get a little closer to your microphone.
Who is he with?
And he is with
yes,
the
sir.
Real Estate Valuation Advocacy Appraisers. And go ahead,
for
Mr.
the opportunity.
Schiffman.
I just wanted to point out an additional point. Out of Dodd-Frank, one of the most important responsibilities, one of the most important things that came out of that was the notion of appraiser independence. As Mr. Derry laid out, there needs to be that buffer between the lender and the appraiser. Lenders who choose to use an AMC, the AMC provides that safeguard. So the role of the AMC is not just to facilitate the appraisal, it's to provide that layer of independence and verify that independence between the lender and the appraiser. Now, as Mr. Derry stated, that there are lenders who don't choose to use AMCs, but they still have to abide by that same standard of safeguarding appraiser independence. They just choose to do it a different way using internal mechanisms. So the one underlying piece to all of this that really is the most important is the appraiser independence piece, and that it was really the basis for why all of this came about through Dodd-Frank. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions as well.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yes. So from what I understand, the only reason we're doing this at the end of the day is so that lenders using federal institutions can have are going to be required to have some version of this.
Correct. We are in the odd, as the organization representing appraisal management companies and certainly our clients, the lenders, we are in the very odd position of asking you to regulate us. And we support it. We support this bill and working with the board and Mr. Derry. It's not a mandate for a lender to use an AMC. They choose to, and that's how it is currently functioning in your state. Should there be no regulation and the state is out of compliance, that is where the disruption would occur. So what we ask through this legislation is to maintain the things the way they are with that layer of licensing and oversight that the appraisal board will provide.
So if I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guttenberg?
Can AMCs exist in Alaska without this oversight?
Sure, they can. The problem is they can't provide services for their lender clients for that 10% or so of transactions. And that's the concern that lenders have, is that they today are using AMCs for 100% of their transactions, and they don't want to have to bifurcate those systems to have a different system for federally related transactions and a different system for non-federally related transactions. But if the state of Alaska were to pass this legislation, AMCs would still exist unregulated, but they would be limited in what they would be able to provide in terms of services to non-federally related transactions, and the real hardship then falls back to the lender who has to find a different way to go about facilitating these transactions.
I mean, I have one more question, Mr. Chair. So you're not asking us to regulate you. You're asking us to allow you to expand the business because there's none here now. But I'm still trying to understand, in the Alaska real estate climate, what is broken? And maybe he's not the right person to hear. I mean, I understand that in the future, in a year or whatever the timeline is, that they're going to have regulatory framework to function in order to do certain kinds of residential transactions with federal lending agencies. But I guess my first question is, outside of that, what is broken in Alaska in this chain between the lending institutions, the appraisal, and the home buyer or seller right now?
Sure, I don't believe that the issue is that there's anything broken in Alaska. I'd say that the issue is that all of this stemmed from concerns nationwide in the Dodd-Frank and the financial meltdown of 2008, and what you're seeing now is the residual effect of the mandate to license or to regulate appraisal management companies by the states. And so what you're seeing now is really Alaska joining the other 46 states that have licensing in place and the other four that are considering legislation similar to this. So it's really about uniformity and bringing Alaska into the same level of consistency with the other lower 48.
I'm sorry, was that Mr. Derry speaking?
That's Mark Schiffman. I apologize.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schiffman. Representative Guttenberg?
I just one question for you, Mr. Chair. Is there somebody from Alaska Housing? I would really appreciate their perspective on this. I think they're one of the reasons why we dodged some of the mortgage crises from.
There is nobody other than the Department of Commerce. There's nobody from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Let's see. Next question was to Representative Guerra, but he stepped out. Any further questions? Seeing none, let's go to our invited testimony, and we have Mark Schiffman, Dave Derry, and Greg Deal, which actually I don't see him online, but we'll we'll come back to him. Mark Schiffman, did you have some prepared remarks that you wanted to provide to the committee?
Chair, I just wanted to express our appreciation and our support for Senate Bill 155. As we've done today, we've answered a lot of questions and certainly maybe even more, and I'll save my comments for that. So other than really just expressing our support and appreciation for those that have helped us craft this legislation and the opportunity to work with them going forward will be important and very helpful. So really my comments are limited to that at this point.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Schiffman. Regarding invited testimony, Mr. Derry, did you have prepared remarks or were you just available for questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had just a couple of comments to make. Again, this is David Derry. I'm serving as the chair of the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers. As the Alaska Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers, we have supported this legislation as it's progressed through the House and the Senate. And we had actually tried to get AMC legislation enacted back in 2008, I believe it was, 2009. The Alaska chapter of the Appraisal Institute had proposed an AMC regulatory bill. However, they were unable to find a sponsor for that, so that bill did not proceed. Basically, I guess our purpose in supporting this is just, again, to maximize the availability of credit for Alaskans for home loan purchases and borrowing, and to respond to Representative Gutenberg's question about Alaska housing. I have not been able to determine whether Alaska housing falls under that or not. This question of federally related transactions, what AMCs can do and what they can't do, should they not be enacted, is a bit fuzzy. And I actually have an explanation of federally related transactions and what that entails. It's actually 3 pages long. I'm sure you don't want to go through all that. But essentially, it comes back to the issue of, as Mr. Schiffman has testified, when a lender originates a loan or starts a loan process, they don't know exactly whether that may or may not be a federally related transaction. And just basically to have the maximum availability of credit, then we would want AMCs to be able to operate in Alaska. And nothing is really broken at this point. I think the only thing that would be broken is that after August of 2018, if we did not have AMCs operating in the state, I could see then, because of some uncertainties of how a loan might go from a lender's perspective, we may find some lower 48 lenders that would just make the determination of, we do not do loans in Alaska. And that would basically curtail some of the availability of credit. Our Alaska population is fairly transient, and we're always looking for more sources of mortgage financing throughout the state. So I think to maximize that, having the AMCs being able to operate is to a benefit to the Alaska consumer. So thank you.
Great, and thank you, Mr. Derry. I've got under invited testimony Greg Deal with Wells Fargo. I just want to make sure he's not online. I don't see him online, and I don't see him in the audience, so just wanted to be sure. So with that, are there any questions from the committee, Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I just want to make sure that I'm correct. So we're not creating a new board. We're putting it under a board that exists. Alaska could be doing an amazing job. This has nothing to do with how appraisers or appraisal companies are working in the state of Alaska. This is literally a federal mandate that if we choose not to meet the mandate, then we could be jeopardizing loans for individuals because you never know. I know when I had a mortgage, it kept getting sold, and I couldn't tell you whether it was to a federal entity or an individual entity because that's just what happens. But I just want to make sure that this has no reflection on what's happening in Alaska. It's simply a federal mandate that could affect mortgages within the state. Is that correct, Senator?
Yep. Through the chair and Representative Wilson, you're absolutely right. It's a deadline that's been put on us by the Dodd-Frank bill that was passed, again due to the 2008-09 mortgage problems and financial problems the whole country was having, and it would just limit us access to some federal loans if we didn't pass this bill. But yeah, you're absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I have a note here. Stacey Schubert, are you online? Oh, she will be calling in. Okay, and she is with AHFC, correct? Oh, Representative Tilton has a question, and we'll come back to Stacey Schubert when she comes online.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if we just go back to the consumer from the very beginning, because somebody who is going to look for dollars to purchase their home, this, what we're expanding this board and expanding what their abilities to do just allows them to go out and maybe get other dollars that might be available on the market that they might not be able to access if we don't do this. So as far as the consumer, the everyday person who's going to a regular institution to get their loan, it doesn't really change what happens to them.
Through the chair, Representative Tilton, that is correct. It won't have any impact on the consumers, I understand it, other than now, you got additional regulation or protection for the consumer. But the consumer then is going to get their loan through the bank. So this allows the bank then to have access to more funds if we pass this bill.
And follow up.
Representative Tilton?
So, but not all banking institutions in our state or loan, because it's not necessarily just banks. There's other loan institutions. Not all of them have to use an AMC? An AMC. It's so voluntary as far as the institution, the lending institution, to use the AMC, or whether they provide other means of following the Dodd-Frank rules of consumer protection.
With the chair, Representative Tilton, you're absolutely right.
Representative Tilton?
There's also some conversation in Congress and on the federal level about some of the rules in Dodd-Frank and whether those are going to still apply or not. But it really wouldn't, in your opinion, it wouldn't matter one way or the other as far as doing this regulation on the board, whether because it's a voluntary, whether they use them or not.
Through the chair, Representative Tilton, as was mentioned, this was first brought to our attention back in 2009 or 10, and we didn't see the urgency to deal with it because we knew we had till 2018 to deal with it, and so that's why, we're kind of under a time frame. And again, this question might be better for Mark, but I would imagine it's the same way at the national level that they may be talking about changes to Dodd-Frank, but when that happens, if it happens, who knows? And how that impacts us in this bill, I don't think anybody knows. Mark may have a better idea.
Mr. Schiffman, would you like to comment on that?
Yes, sir. This is Mark Schiffman. Senator, thank you, and through the chair. Currently, there are no proposals in Congress that would have an impact on AMC regulation by the states. If by some magic at some point in time that were to happen, then it would be up to the state to decide if it wanted to continue to regulate appraisal management companies. But again, there's nothing in current law or current proposed law or even discussion about the removal of this provision within Dodd-Frank. And the reason being has to do with the appraisal independence piece. That's really the underlying factor for why this is so important.
Representative Hilton?
I think this might be my final question. So earlier, I believe that there's about 10% of the funding that maybe you might not be able to access if you don't have these rules in place. And so is it more of because not necessarily so much of what the consumer is looking for in their loan, although it could give them better terms possibly, is it more the packaging of the loan, packaging of the loans as they sell them into the secondary market?
To the chair, I think that's probably a better question for the experts online there, either Mark or the gentleman from Kenai.
Mr. Schiffman or Mr. Derry, if you'd like to jump in.
Thank you. To the chair, could you repeat your question again for me, please? I wasn't certain I totally followed the question.
Sure. And I'm sorry, is this Mr. Schiffman or Derry?
I'm sorry. This is David Derry.
Thank you. Representative Tilton, if you could repeat the question.
Thank you. So I guess I'm just curious that earlier it was the testimony was that it would, there was about 10% of the loans that might be federally regulated that could have better terms for the consumer. Mm-hmm. And so my kind of question was it more for the institutions that want to package their loans to be able to sell them on the secondary market that they're meeting all the federal requirements?
Through the chair, Representative Tilton, basically this is part of the origination process for a loan. So the lender that would be originating that would be going through the AMC for getting the appraisal and then back to that lender. When the loan is actually originated or made then to the consumer, then subsequent to that, they would sell that loan to an investor. And what the terms would be of that loan would be set as part of that original loan application process. So the question here again about federally related transactions and the 10% that fall under that category really is the confusing issue. And again, not to keep hammering this away, but essentially from the originating lender's perspective, then if they start a loan and they're not sure whether it's going to be fall under that federally related transaction or not, then if they got into an application process for someone determining that it was not a federally related transaction, and then they switched to a different type of program, for example, Federal Housing Administration, FHA loan, and determined that it was then a federally related transaction, then they would have to essentially stop and say, we cannot process your loan any further. So it's just a simplification process, if that answers your question.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, if I might also jump in, my name is Mark Schiffman, and just to add to Mr. Derry's comments, one of the primary roles that an AMC provides a lender, or the value that an AMC provides the lender, in addition to the appraisal independent safeguard that I mentioned, is the quality control that goes on the back end of once that appraisal is submitted. It is the quality control that helps make sure that appraisal meets all standards, and that is what it gives the confidence in the secondary market in the event that loan is ever sold. So not only are you providing that important information to the lender and to the borrower who are obtaining their mortgage on the first go-round, but if that mortgage is ever sold to the secondary mortgage, the fact that appraisal was conducted, whether it be an AMC or not an AMC, that quality control and all of those pieces to it are what give the secondary market confidence in purchasing and selling and all the things that they do.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Ortiz and then Guttenberg.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, the good work was done by Representative Tilton and Representative Wilson. I have no further questions. Thank you.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yeah, just want to get a little bit of clarification. Well, I wasn't concerned about Alaska Housing's coverage under this. I just wanted a little bit of perspective. So what I understand, this is going to allow loans to be made with federal agencies to be made with residential homes. But if we don't pass this, then we're going to be driving business towards Alaska banks. Would that be an accurate assessment of the result of not passing this? And how does this deal with Alaska credit unions or federal credit unions in Alaska?
And would that question be directed to?
I can respond to that.
Go ahead. And this is who? I'm sorry. This is who?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is David Derry, again, here at the Alaska Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers. And the question, it really doesn't relate to essentially if AMC legislation is not enacted. It really doesn't make it any easier for Alaska banks to operate. And essentially, it just broadens the market for consumer borrowing for home loans. As I mentioned earlier, some Alaska banks do use AMCs, some do not. Some banks that operate in Alaska, for example, Wells Fargo, does use AMCs, obviously a national organization. First National Bank of Alaska does not. And the credit unions are under the same obligation as the federally regulated banks. So a credit union, Alaska USA credit union, does use AMCs, and whether, you know, if we did not enact AMC legislation, then does it make the market open up for Alaska banks? Not necessarily. It just would basically limit those other lending sources. And as Mr. Schiffman has testified, the AMC's function is to provide that independence between the appraiser and the loan officer. So those banks that do not use an AMC, that actually do them internally, set up their own internal organization where they have that person or persons that do the ordering, the review, and the determination of whether the appraisal meets their underwriting standards, and then it goes from that to the lending originating the loan officers, the lenders themselves. So it can be done either way, and it certainly doesn't make it easier for Alaska banks to operate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. Just to let the committee know, we do have available, if there are questions, Stacy Schubert with AHFC. And are there any further questions? I don't see any further questions, so let's go over to public testimony. Open that up for SB 155. And is there anybody in the room here who would like to testify? Is there anybody online who would like to testify? And I do not believe there is. So with that, I just want to let folks know who might be watching that they can submit written testimony to housefinance@akleg.gov. Again, that is housefinance@akleg.gov. So with that, we will close public testimony on SB 155. And with that, is there anything else that the sponsor, Senator Meyer or Ms. Morledge, would like to add before we, I guess, check to see if anybody might have any amendments or what the wishes of the committee might be?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for hearing our bill today. I know it's busy times for all of us. I would just like to respond a little bit to Representative Guttenberg's comments about what impact this would have on state banks and lending institutions in our state of Alaska. And there, hopefully in your file, there are some letters from, I see one from Wells Fargo, one from the Chamber of Commerce, and then one as well from the Alaska Banking Association, all supporting this bill.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions? Seeing none, does the committee anticipate any amendments? And I'm not seeing any. So with that, let's take we're going to take a quick at ease. On record. So with that, there are no anticipated amendments, in which case I would ask if Vice or Co-Chair Seaton could read the fiscal notes into the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. From the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, Appropriation, Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licensing, same allocation, OMB component 2360. This note reflects expenditure of $111,900 in receipt services for FY19 and an expense in receipt services of $97,500 in the out years until FY24. Fiscal note also reflects a change in revenues of receipt services in an equal amount through FY24.
Thank you. We have a question from Representative Wilson.
And I just want to verify, because it's not really clear, but this position that we're adding is going to be for the Real Estate Appraisal Management Board, and not for any other boards. I just want to put that on the record. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson. That's probably a better question for Sarah Chambers, I think, who did the fiscal note. But yes, they do need additional manpower to implement this program. Now, whether that person's going to be 100% occupied just on this program is a better question for her.
Can we find out from Ms. Chambers, just sure, to make sure?
Ms. Chambers, if you are online, if you could just put yourself on the record, and we can repeat the question if needed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This is Sarah Chambers, Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. And we are asking for an additional licensing examiner, one of the junior positions that helps process those applications, because we are at full capacity. We have recently, in the last few years, had several additional licensing programs added where we did not ask for additional staff, and the programs have grown quite a bit larger than what was anticipated at the time of their creation. So what we would expect with this position is that they would, part of their time would be working on this program, and then the remainder of their time would be working on other licensing programs where there may be diminished service levels due to a lack of staff. This is all covered by receipts from those specific programs, in keeping with our positive timekeeping methods. So we do expect this person to work primarily on real estate appraisers, but also to work on other programs as needed to maintain expected service levels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Are there any further questions on the fiscal note? Seeing no questions, I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 155, Version 30, LS1295/N from House Finance Committee with individual recommendations in attached fiscal note.
Are there any objections?
Objection for discussion.
We have an objection. Representative Guttenberg, would you like
to
your
Chair.
Objection?
You know, this could be perfectly great. When we set up these things, I'm always a little bit suspicious. And I'm not going to object to moving this. But the more and more we do this, it becomes obvious that there is no entity in the state that represents consumers, whether it's for prescription drug prices, whether it's for telecommerce, whether it's banking. There is no person that comes before us that simply says, I am a neutral voice on behalf of consumers. And, you know, for this one, they might come in and say, this is the best thing in the world for consumers. And I hope that's true. But as we go forward, all the things that we do, there is no voice that in, there is no public sector, there is no private sector voice that says, here is a neutral consumer position, that here's what's happened in other places, here's why it's good, here's why it's bad. Just a neutral voice. And it the more and more it becomes obvious that there is a lack of that voice. I mean, theoretically, it's us, but for this bill, I mean, it came up, it might be great to have somebody have looked at something like this or compare other states in a neutral voice for consumers. That would really be appreciated, because, you know, to take the time, especially this time of the year, to do the background work and all that stuff, and NCSL might have some, but the situation in Alaska with any of these things, it's really missing. And, you know, whether they agree with me or disagree with me is not the point, but there's a we lack a voice for the a neutral voice for the consumer. And with that, I withdraw my objection.
The objection has been removed. Is there a further objection? Representative Guerra?
Thank you. Through the chair, I just want to make sure the sponsor is okay. Are you okay moving this on Friday the 13th?
Representative, or through the chair, Representative Guerra, yes, that, I'm perfectly okay with
That's your preference, okay. And the, just on Representative Guttenberg's point, I've shared the same concern. We're the only state that doesn't have a consumer protection agency. We have basically 1.5 attorneys of the Department of Law that do their best, but that's a fraction of what they used to have. And I think the only agency we have where there's a consumer voice is the RCA. And then, so it's not, this bill isn't the place to do that, but it is something for folks to think about, as Representative Guttenberg mentioned. And if the sponsor wants the bill to move on Friday the 13th, then I'm good with that, too. I withdraw my objection.
Any further objection? Seeing no objection, SB 155, version 30-LS1295/N is reported out from House Finance with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the report. Okay, and our next piece of legislation is HB 399, which is Corporate Tax Remove Exemptions and Credits by House Finance. And the committee last heard this bill on April 9th, and the committee has one amendment before them. So at this time, I'd like to ask Mr. Brody Anderson to come to the table and put yourself on the record and just see if there's anything you wanted to say before we move to the amendment process.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Finance Committee members. My name, for the record, is Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Neil Foster. I'm available to walk the committee through very quickly what this bill does, or we can jump right to the amendment at the will of the committee.
Maybe if you could just do a very short refresher, just very short.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll keep it brief. This HB 399 is a piece of legislation that eliminates some identified indirect expenditures. They are certain federal tax credits, a foreign royalty exclusion, the reduced rate for capital gains, and a credit associated with the Stranded Gas Act. The current legislation before the committee, before amended, had a potential savings or a potential ability to capture $6.9 million of foregone revenue. If and when the amendment passes, obviously that will change, and I believe the Department of Revenue will be able to speak about that a little bit as well. Mr. Chairman, that's a very brief walkthrough.
Thank you. I also want to note that Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director of the Tax Division, is available online, calling in from, I believe, Anchorage. Are there any questions? I'm not seeing any questions, so let's jump right into the amendments. Representative Wilson?
I move amendment number one.
And we have an objection. Representative Wilson?
And first of all, I want to say thank you to you and your office for their assistance on this. I could not have done this on my own as eloquently, so I truly appreciate it. I am fine getting rid of credits when they're doing activity in other states, but I do think that we to recognize that they've done specific work in the state of Alaska and to be able to use those federal credits, I think it's kind of, you know, making that distinction between the two. And I'm sure Representative Foster's staff can add anything else that needs to be added.
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative, thank you for the amendment. It is a good compromise. The idea of indirect expenditures were to identify and eliminate those foregone revenue that was lost to the state. This is one of those things that this amendment helps the corporations keep money that they're doing in state, and Department of Revenue both has, you know, when we're working through this, at least it does identify the work and the expenses done, and it's a, it definitely is a friendly amendment to the legislation.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Representative Kira?
Chair, I still don't understand this amendment, so I wouldn't mind if the Department of Revenue came up and explained the ramifications, both fiscally and as a matter of policy.
He just left.
He's grabbing a bill.
Mr. Anderson?
I thought he was coming up here. There he is.
I don't know what it does. This is what I think is what I was trying to say.
Mr. Alper, if you wouldn't mind putting yourself on the record and...
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ken Alpert, Director of the Tax Division for the Department of Revenue, and Deputy Director Spanos is online and can speak to this in better detail. But the intent of the amendment, as I understand it, Mr. Anderson said as much as well, what were any credit that a company earns anywhere against their federal corporate income tax, 18% of that credit under current law could be applied against your Alaska cap corporate income tax in the various apportionment formulas. So what the bill did was stop that from happening. And what Representative Wilson's amendment does is to say, well, if the credit was earned for an activity in Alaska, then it would still be able to come in and be subject to the existing offset that exists in current law. We're only eliminating credits that are earned in states other than Alaska, for activity in states other than Alaska. And if you don't mind, I'd like to call on Mr. Spanos to see if he has anything to add to that.
Mr. Spanos, if you could put yourself on the record and maybe add to the discussion.
Yes, for the record, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Tax Division. And I think Mr. Alper really did a pretty good job that, that currently, under current statute, a company earning a federal credit in any state can take 18% of that credit in Alaska against their tax. And this and the original bill, 399, got rid of all federal credits so that that none of the credits could be taken against Alaska tax. The amendment is allowing that portion of the credit that was earned from activity in Alaska to be taken against the tax. So really, it's converting federal credits to Alaska credits. Any federal credit then becomes an Alaska-specific credit.
Through the chair.
Representative Garrett.
So the fiscal note before this amendment was that we would save about $6.9 million in lost revenue a year. And do you have any idea what this amendment would do to the revenue to the state, the revenue impact, that the positive revenue impact to the state?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra. So the fiscal note of $6.9 million on the narrative page, on the second page, broke out the impact of the several changes made by the bill. This 18% federal credit piece is only one of those components, and that component was worth, we estimated, $1.8 million. So some fraction of the $1.8 million would come back in terms of lost revenue, but I wouldn't anticipate it to be a very large percentage because we're dealing with the ratio of a company's Alaskan activities to their national activities is probably a fairly small ratio in general. A couple hundred thousand dollars at the most would reduce the revenue impact of the fiscal note.
Through the chair.
Representative Gere.
So just so I understand, of the $1.8 million generated by the original bill in federal credits, you anticipate a small portion of just that $1.8 million figure to sort of disappear in revenue for the state, and then the other parts of the revenue will remain the same?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay.
If I may add to that.
Mr. Spanos?
Yes, Brandon Spanos for the record. I did talk with our corporate income tax auditor on this, supervisor on this, this topic, and asked what percentage we might think. And we will give an updated fiscal note if this amendment passes. But it may be even as high as a third of that 1.8, so up to 600,000. There's the EOR credit for the oil and gas industry. Currently, they're operating at losses. If you look at our annual report and the net income, corporate net income tax. But when they get into a positive net income, that credit can be taken, and it would be a larger number.
Thank you, Mr. Guttenberg, Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a quick one maybe for your staff after later in the bill. But we just saw a different format for fiscal notes, and this is obviously from legal. Are we seeing different formats for legal as well? But that's not my question, maybe. So like my question in the last bill and the question was, as a result of what we're doing, are we going to drive business into Alaska? So the percentage is going to go down, or what we're going to spend. Is there any anticipation that those corporations would be, seeing they could get a credit in Alaska, would be driving more activity in here that was creditable? Is that part of the speculation? I mean, as a result of this, to see more whatever qualifying credit would be, would not be a bad thing. So I'm just asking if there's any anticipation we would see more activity of in Alaska that would be deductible off their taxes.
So, Mr. Alper?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I don't consider myself expert in the federal tax code, and I don't know precisely what federal corporate income tax credits there are available out there. To the extent companies are earning them for activity done in Alaska, it's clear to understand that this amendment doesn't add anything. It just doesn't take it away either. So they would continue to earn that benefit for whatever it is they might do in Alaska that would earn those credits. Therefore, I don't know that it would specifically increase business activity, but it at very least wouldn't do anything to take away any incentive to do things in Alaska.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson?
And it is another incentive. I mean, as you're doing the bottom line and putting it in, it's something else that they'll look at to realize that if they're doing it in New York or California, it's no longer going to be able to credit off your Alaskan project. So as they're doing their spreadsheets, it's another incentive to do business in Alaska and a deduction they could get for that versus in another state.
Through the chair, I would agree with Representative Wilson. It certainly can't hurt. It might help, and at very worst would do no harm.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions on amendment number one? Seeing none, is the objection maintained?
We made it.
Representative Guerra did?
No, it's not much.
The objection has been withdrawn. Are there any further objections? Hearing none, amendment number one has been adopted. And so with that, are there any other questions regarding the bill before we go to the fiscal note? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, and I'm curious. I had notes on my fiscal note here previously, and that was that the reduced rate on capital gains was a major portion of this, and that's zero now. Is that correct because of change to the federal tax code? I mean, I just want to make sure because we were talking about 6.9 or something on the original fiscal note, but I think we found the other day that was more in the 3 range.
Mr. Anderson?
Through the chair, Representative, actually, when the legislation was first drafted, the federal government still had recognized capital gains. Since then, that has changed, but the reduction of the lost revenue of 3.4 captured, that actually it will stays constant in the bill. It's just before they still recognized capital gains at the full rate of taxation, and we had a reduced rate, and we were getting rid of that reduced rate. Now the federal government has removed that recognition all in total. So I believe Department of Revenue can answer that even maybe a little bit more clearer.
Mr. Alper.
The section in our corporate income tax statute that refers to a lower tax rate is repealed in House Bill 399. That part is unchanged. The way that that references federal statute is a little bit different because the federal law has changed, the corporate rates change, the corporate tables change. But my understanding is there will still be a revenue impact. There, if nothing else, this section will clarify it for some future dispute with companies who might not fully grasp, who might choose to try to claim at the lower capital gains rate that's in existing Alaska statute. It's a little bit of a gray area whether we'll actually get the full $3.4 million anyway without this bill or if we need this bill to pin it down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And so the bottom line is that number for now is just fine as is. 3.4, leave that there.
My opinion, and again, that's not definitive, is that it should absolutely remain in there.
Thank you. Okay, any further questions on the fiscal notes? Hearing none. Representative Guerra,
yeah.
I guess if you could read the fiscal note into the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill has one fiscal note, OMB component 2476, for the Department of Revenue, Appropriation, Taxation, and Treasury Allocation Tax Division. It's estimated under the original bill that it would save the state and get the state $3.45 million a year for the first half year in revenue, and then in subsequent full years return to the state $6.9 million a year in revenue. And with the amended fiscal note, we anticipate that $6.9 million and $3.45 million number might go down a little bit per the testimony we heard. So I think we'll get another fiscal note.
And before I entertain a motion, are there any questions on the fiscal notes note or bill? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 399, version 30, LS1230/O from the House Finance Committee as amended with individual recommendations and forthcoming fiscal note.
Any objections? Hearing none, HB 399, version 30-LS1230/O as amended, is reported out from House Finance with individual recommendations and the attached forthcoming fiscal notes. And so with that, if everybody could stick around and we will sign the report. We will take up SB 78, which is the lottery bill. That is the permanent fund dividend contributions and lottery bill at this afternoon's meeting. And let's see here. Is there anything else to come for the committee? Hearing none, for our next meeting, which is scheduled for 1:30 this afternoon, Friday, April the 13th, we will be also taking up HB 411, oil and gas production tax payments and credits. Will be. And so with that, we will be recessed, and the time now is 10:23 a.m. Thank you.